20,000 feet up, breaking all the lights on the doors, and I ain't seen no ceilings. We came in through the top floor.
You're listening to Feminist Killjoys, PhD, an hour of feminism, pop culture, and politics, as discussed by two professional killjoys.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Melody.
And today we'll be unveiling our best of 2016 list that will be coveted and repurposed by feminists around the world. But first, Melody, where can our listeners find us on the internet?
You should really read the script before we go. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, leave a review there. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We have a mixtape on Spotify called Feminist Killjoys PhD Mixtape. Very creative there. I have some. Do you have extra dollars and want to support feminist media makers? You can donate to us directly on our website, which is feministkilljoyspodcast.com, or we have a Patreon account set up. Thank you to all of those who have donated. And of course, if you want to email us, our Gmail is fkj.phd. And that is it. How are you doing, Rachel?
I'm good. Oh, you can see me. I forgot we video now. You can see me swaying. I'm doing great.
Great. I'm doing great, too.
I'm doing great. I'm just dancing in my seat.
Okay.
Where can they email us?
I already went over that. fkj.phd@gmail.com. No, I said our Gmail is fkj.phd, so it's actually really concise.
I hear you. Yeah. I just want to follow up about my Christmas wish for iTunes reviews.
Okay.
Please leave us iTunes reviews. Can I start the check-in?
Yes, I asked you how you're doing, so go
okay,
ahead.
Okay, great. Hey, listeners, trigger warning. If you are battling alcohol addiction and feeling triggered by listening to people who are under the influence of alcohol, don't listen to this episode because I am tipsy. I had one cocktail and half a glass of wine, and that's enough for me to be a little tipsy. I'm going to be great during this podcast, but here's the story. I went to this writer's workshop this morning, and that's my check-in. I went to this writer's workshop, and I was really excited, and then my partner and I went on a date because we had a fight, and we wanted to, like, reconnect, and so we had a day date, and so we day drank a cocktail at a bar. And it was a strong cocktail. It was, like, really strong. I don't know how people, like, handle cocktails because it was, like, big. But now Melody and I are recording. What's that? It was a Manhattan.
Oh, that's why. Those are just, it's just straight booze. That's why.
It's just straight booze. I know. But I really like whiskey. I don't drink vodka anymore. Partly because whiskey, honestly, like, helps me not drink as much because it's so strong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, I don't want to, like, down whiskey the way that I used to when Melody knew me. Well, I didn't drink that much in grad school, no. But when I was an undergrad and occasionally when I drink in grad school, if I drink vodka, it was like very easy. So anyway, so I've had a little whiskey in me, but we're going to do great in this podcast. And that's maybe why I sound a little slurry, but everything's fine. And I'm going to be great. I'm drinking seltzer water exclusively now.
Putting the sparkling?
Polar seltzer. It's the holiday edition. If y'all love seltzer water, you should. I don't know. Do you guys have Polar in Minneapolis?
No.
Yeah, no. This is an East Coast thing. It's an East Coast thing. So East Coast listeners, Polar seltzer water, winter citrus and berry is like literally the best seltzer water that exists in the world. Melody, do you drink La Croix?
I do drink La Croix.
Do you say La Croix though?
No.
You say La Croix?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Even from Wisconsin.
I'm in the La Croix demographic. I'm not sure who
love
else
it,
is.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah, I love grape. What's your favorite flavor?
The grapefruit.
Me too. Oh my God. So good, right? So yeah, this is citrus and berry, and it basically tastes like grapefruit plus a tiny bit of like holiday berry. It's really good.
What's a holiday anyway, berry?
I like cranberry. It tastes like cranberry.
Oh, okay.
Which is good for UTIs.
Yes, it is.
Late health for people who have uteruses and vaginas.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing?
But people with penises get UTIs.
Oh, I guess that's true, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So they have to drink.
Well then people who have, anybody who pees.
Yeah. Drink cranberry juice. Yeah.
Cranberry juice.
Gender,
great. How are you?
Gender, sex doesn't matter.
Gender neutral.
Right now. Yeah. It's a gender neutral.
Gender education.
I'm doing well. I got a Christmas tree.
Oh, fun. How big is it?
6 feet.
Holy moly.
It's a
real
tree.
We got one that's like a foot and a half.
Oh, no, we went all out. There's a farmer's market near us that just like turns into a Christmas tree factory, but it's like all natural tree growing and yada yada. So we just got one there.
Fun.
Yeah.
That's great. You told me this earlier and I asked, or like maybe a week ago, and I thought Robert was going to cut it down because he like is like a tree person.
I think that was a joke.
That was a legitimate question for me, but then you were like, no, LOL.
Oh, I forgot you actually asked me that.
I actually asked you that, yeah.
He would if there's trees around here that he could cut down.
Yeah, but totally.
Never cared for jingle bells or picking out a tree. I would rather paint my nails and watch some bad TV. But ever since we shared a kiss, I've been spreading the news. It never felt like Christmas.
Thing is, Lizzo is in town this whole weekend, so I'm going to see her tonight. And tomorrow, I recruited two of my students who are budding feminists. And
Melody, that's so awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Lizzo was in town, this past Sunday, and I didn't buy tickets. And then I saw on her Instagram, she was like, hey, Boston, what's good? And I was like devastated that I didn't go. I just felt tired and whatever. And I feel poor a lot and I didn't buy tickets. And I'm really sad that I didn't, because it looked like, I bet she's amazing live.
Yeah, she's a really good performer. But if you're not if you're not hyped up, then it's, you would feel like awful going, because it's such a high energy show and you would be like, I can't do it.
But the thing about me is that, and I'd be curious to know if you feel this way and how listeners feel. Like, we both talked about how, so you identify as an introvert. I identify as, very borderline, because, I get a ton of energy from other people, but I can also feel very drained by it from other people. But, most of the time, if I actually get to a place with other people, my, extrovert characteristics will come out and, I can get super amped up, but it's just the act of getting to that place. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So I probably would have had a great time if I forced myself to go, but I was it's a Sunday night. I have to wake up early Monday morning, blah, blah, blah.
I got you.
It didn't happen. Anyway, also Boston is so hard to get around. Anyway. So good check-in. I had some other stuff to say, but I'll stop there so we can get on with the show. Who's ruining the dinner party for you this week?
Capitalism.
Same.
Why is it ruining it for you?
So it is always, literally always ruining my dinner party. I am a person who comes from a single mom who's working class, and is really struggling financially, lives in a trailer park, etc. And as a person who supposedly surpassed that class background. Hello, is that Daniel or?
Yep.
That was the loudest meow. Hi, Daniel.
That's because he was
Daniel
right
hates
the
capitalism, too.
Yeah, he does. That's why
Daniel
he's coming in to say
so
hi.
So much. The short version is that I think part of it is, the holiday season. I'm, obsessed with Christmas in, a weird way that's, I can feel, wholesome and pure around the holidays in a way that most of my life doesn't feel wholesome and pure. But also, I'll just have some real talk with the listeners because it might be helpful. And one reason I went to this writer's workshop this morning to talk about how to write a memoir is because I want to talk about writing things that connect with people, because memoirs have been so helpful for me, is that I am partnered with a person who has parents that are much wealthier than my single mom is. And we just had like a really frank conversation about the way that holidays play out in terms of when I go to his parents' house for Christmas, it's like a very nice home with very expensive things and lots and lots and lots of Christmas presents. And my home is, well, my mom lives in a trailer. We usually have Christmas at my uncle's house, who has like a nice house. And we don't have a ton of presents, which is like 1,000,000% fine with me. But it was like, I just really struggle as like a working class person who doesn't have a lot of people around me who know what it's like to have grown, not only grown up in poverty, but also like still have parents/parent that are still in poverty. And the holiday season kind of exacerbates that. So that's why I hate capitalism right now, because on a very personal level, I feel very impacted by it.
Sugar plums and candy canes, they did nothing for me. You could find me home alone and order.
And like Black Friday, and you're like really good at like not wanting to consume things as a way to resist capitalism. And it's so hard though, because this season like really pressures people to consume and buy and purchase things. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like real Rachel talking about like, I just want to like say all that out loud, because maybe there are some listeners who like can identify with not only being like disconnected from like massive consumption around Christmas, but actually fiscally incapable of that in particular ways. And it's also weird for me because I still love Christmas in spite of all of that. So I still want to like sing all the Christmas songs and whatever, but like capitalism makes it terrible because rich people have much happier Christmases more generally than poor people.
That's not always true.
That's not always true. That's 100% not always true.
I'm sure
true.
A lot of rich people have shitty ass. Imagine sure all the latchkey true. Kids who don't have any other parents who are like on a cruise.
That's real.
Yeah,
that's
you
real.
Should feel like way more sympathetic for rich people, Rachel. I mean, I just feel like, you know, it's always.
I'm sorry.
It's always about the I'm working sorry, class. And it's like rich people like have bad feelings too. So.
It's true. No, I actually like totally want to like actually validate that, like not even in a sarcastic way. Like. That's super real. I will just say that being poor, being raised poor /having parents/parent that are still poor is like really fucking hard.
Yeah. And Christmas is real. And it just like, especially when you're young, like, because you just, the whole point after the holidays, it's like, what'd you get?
Right.
And it's like,
right.
Makes you feel shitty like the minute the question is asked. So.
Yeah, totally.
All right.
Anyway, so that's that.
Do something more fun.
Fun. Fun.
Anyways. Fun. So,
all right. So what's our topic for today?
Today our topic is best ofs. Best of 2016. Sometimes these are our actual favorites, and sometimes it is just the top 3/only 3 things that we consumed in that category.
Exactly. Yeah, so obviously there's so many memes on the internet, and I know, Mel, you haven't been able to, like, see this on Facebook, but maybe on Twitter and your other social meds. There's, like, so many memes about how 2016 is, like, the fucking worst, but, like, we still want to do, like, the best ofs, because in terms of, as people who are, like, super interested in consuming media, we want to talk about music and movies and creative stuff that has been produced, as well as some activist stuff. And yeah, it was a super shitty year, but some really lovely things came out of it. / filling this out made us realize that we don't consume as much media as we thought we did. Yeah, so that's real. So why don't we start with a very prime example of that? Two media studies professors don't really see a lot of movies. What are your top 3 movies of the year, if you can even come up with them?
Announcing best of the movie. Yeah, so this is the cat. I've never been big into movies, though, because that requires half to 2 hours of my attention and time, and it just always seems like too much of an investment. It's like, I don't know if I want to give 2 hours of my day over to a movie. Anyways, Moonlight, I talked about that one recently. And I don't know if I talked about this movie, but I saw this independent film called Ixanu, which is Guatemalan. So it's I-X-C-A-N-U-L.
Put in the show notes.
But it's a film that was made and directed and starred people from Guatemala. And it was, the narrative is like interesting. It's like, oh, this teenage girl, like, loves this like drunky dude and he's a jerk, but she loves him. But it's all like set in Guatemala, obviously, and they're very poor. There's like a lot of female bonding that happens, and yeah, it's just a really beautiful film. And you usually don't get to see films from Guatemala in the United States, so that was a big one. And yeah, Moonlight. Those were also like the only two films I saw in the theater besides Sisters.
Okay, so you have a top two.
Well, combined, we have a top three, or because sometimes the stuff, your top things are also my top things, but because you filled this out first, I didn't get to choose, you know, so I just added. So this is like our collective top, you know, because then otherwise, what are we going to do? Like have a fight about what is our real top five, you know, if we each get.
Okay. So those are great. I would love to see both those movies. I'm particularly sort of annoyed that I haven't found a way to see Moonlight yet, because I really, really, really want to see that. And I'm thinking it would make my top list. But in the meantime, I want to mention the movie Hunt for the Wilder People, which came out this summer. It's a movie from New Zealand. And although it's like very male centric, it certainly does not pass the Bechdel test. It's, it does like, very sort of subtly focus on indigenous life in New Zealand in a way that feels kind of important. And it's about a young boy, we never get, I don't think, like a full articulation of his identity, but he is not like a white, he's not a white person. And he's in New Zealand, and he is adopted by this family who sort of lives in like literally like the rural mountains where like there's nothing to be seen for miles and miles and miles and miles. And he gets adopted by this family, and he's this little kid. He's like 10 years old, and he's charming as fuck. He's obsessed with Tupac. He's like, he wears a Tupac jacket, All Eyes on Me. It says on the back. It's amazing. It's like so precious. And he's adopted by this family, and then like the matriarch of this family dies. So it's just like the father of this family who didn't actually like really want this kid anyway. But then they like end up having to like sort of like bond because this woman died. And they're sort of out in the wilderness, sort of like managing, coping as like a new family unit. And it's really fucking moving and like lovely, and also sort of touches on like indigenous life in New Zealand that I knew nothing about, that felt really maybe important. And I really, really liked it. So that movie, 13th is the documentary that Avery DuVernay put out. She's the woman who directed Selma. She created a documentary that is about the prison industrial complex and its relationship to chattel slavery. It's very related to Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow. I believe Michelle Alexander is interviewed in the documentary. It's really powerful, really like, here's what's fucked up, here's what's fucked up, here's what's fucked up, like checks the box and like is really, really, really good. And I played that in a class that I taught this semester, and it was really good. So those two really topped the list. Honorable mentions, Ghostbusters, for the fact that it like created this sort of feminist space for women in like a major motion picture. Finding Dory I thought was very moving. And then I just want to give a super side honorable mention. I'm breaking rules here, but Appropriate Behavior is the movie I mentioned on the podcast before that is an Iranian bisexual queer woman who made this beautiful film about being an Iranian bisexual queer woman, and I felt really identified with it. It was actually created in 2014, but it was released on HBO in 2016. So I'm going to count it in our 2016 top five, top threes.
Your top three, top five.
Top three, top five. So that's my list of movies.
Daniel would like to add in something. I don't know why he wants to be on this podcast so bad this week. Most weeks he could care less about it, but this
week he's pretty silent other weeks. Yeah.
He's not very interested in what we talk about. Because he's like, yeah, duh, I already know all this.
I already know that.
Sunny and blue, I can feel it deep inside. This black nigga's pride. I have no fear when I say, and I say it every day. Every nigga is a star. Every nigga is a star. Who will deny that you and I, and every nigga is a star?
Anyway, so yeah, that's the movie category. How about TV shows?
Black Mirror, obviously, I talk about it all the time. And that, yeah, that just came, the Netflix part of it came out this year, but it's been around for a couple years. So I played it for my students and they're like, whoa, dude.
Tell us again, in case somebody hadn't heard episodes before this, like tell us about the premise.
That it is it started in Britain and it moved to Netflix. So it got Americanized, but it's a show about, mostly futuristic time, but not too far ahead in the future, like maybe 10 years, and kind of looks at how our obsession with technology right now and social media, like if we took that to the nth degree, what it would look like in our society. So,
And
some of the episodes.
I was just saying, I can't wait to watch it, but I haven't yet, but you've warned me about certain episodes not to watch.
There's just a few. Not to watch. I got, somebody told me about another episode not to watch either, but I can't remember it off the top of my head. Just read the synopses, and if they seem dark, you might just want to skip it.
Yeah. Ooh,
or if it starts to get a little horror showy, you should just turn it off, because like if it's making you feel uncomfortable, because it's just going to get worse from there. So.
Yeah, okay.
Good. Anyways, so Black Mirror, and then SNL's been pretty stellar this year with the election stuff, and now they don't give a fuck. Did I talk to you? I talked to you about this last week, I hope, on the podcast. I can't remember.
We talk about SNL quite a bit, but what specifically?
Last week they did Weekend Update, and like they didn't give a fuck. Like they were super pro Dapple. They you know what I mean? Like I feel like they really shifted. Like something shifted after the election. They're like, fuck it. Like we're just going to go full on.
I think so too. Yeah, I agree. And like, I think it's, in this writing workshop I was in today, the person who was running the workshop was saying like some kind of like very political things up front, and they were like, I guess I don't know everybody's politics here, but after this election, I kind of don't fucking care. And I was like, yeah, that's sort of like the tenor of things. It's like, yeah, maybe there are conservatives in this room, but like if you're fucking a conservative who voted for Donald Trump, you like deserve to hear me say, fuck you, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like I do agree that that happened on SNL as well.
Yep. That's a good way to put it. Okay. So how would you like to add to this list?
So to the top TV shows of 2016 list, I would definitely like to say the third season of Transparent. I love the show Transparent. I've talked about this on the podcast before. I'm so like deeply impacted by shows that speak to like my queer experience as like a queer person in the world. And Transparent is a show that is produced by not only queer people, but also trans people. And I am not a trans person, but as a person who's in a relationship with a trans person, it feels very, I mean, I'm being a broken record because I know we've had the same conversation, but like the fact that like cis straight white men have had books and movies to consume that speak to their specific experience, and to know that I've been like locked out of that and like not been like privy to what it feels like to have media speak to your experience, and then to have things that do speak to your experience is like powerful as fucking shit. So I I fucking love Transparent. I know there are some problems with it, particularly including that they hired a cisgender male actor to play a transgender woman, but Jeffrey Tambor has been so incredible as an ally. Every time he wins an award, he says, he literally said last time he won an award that he hopes he is the last cisgender man who ever plays a transgender woman on in media. Like he has learned so much from being on set with queer people and trans people. And Jill Soloway started hiring almost exclusively transgender people to direct each episode that she wrote, including Silas Howard, who is like literally my like number one celebrity crush ever. I just love Silas Howard so much, and he's a trans director, and I'm just so obsessed with him. Silas Howard, if you're listening, I make out with you someday. I'm so obsessed with him. So definitely Transparent season 3, and it ended so well. If you saw it,
don't say.
Y'all know what I'm talking about. I won't say anything, but oh my god, Judith Light, OMG. Okay, so there's that. Also, Insecure. Insecure started not so strong. I was like not like super sold on the first couple episodes, partly because I'm a white lady, and it is like. But one of the things that I love about Insecure is that it is so fucking written for like black fucking women, and there are some things that I don't get, and it's just like the way that I know that straight people watch Transparent and like they don't get some things. I watch Insecure and I don't get some things because I'm a fucking white lady. Mm-hmm. But I fucking, like, so appreciate that about it. And it's just so fucking good. And Issa Rae is, like, talks about relationships and talks about being a woman and talks about hip-hop and talks about careers and, like, all this shit so beautifully. It is, like, it's so fucking good. I love Insecure so much. I would definitely say those two things top my list. I would also include SNL. I think SNL has been pretty on point this season as well.
Cool.
Those are my top three.
Excelente. Let's go on to best of 16 albums.
You go.
Coconut Oil, the digital-only EP by Lizzo. Mm-hmm. Although, to be honest, I haven't heard every track off of it because I buy CDs. But everything Lizzo puts out is amazing. So the minute it came out, it was on my top. Mm-hmm. Top best of list. Ruminations by Connor Oberst. And I know we had a few other listeners that also maybe this award would resonate with. And shout out to Rihanna's Anti album because that album is really dope.
Yeah, you talked about how much you like the sort of sexual empowerment of that album before.
Sex with me, so amazing. Out of soul can you, work, no
if you ever get back on Facebook, can you make, because Facebook right now asks for like a summary of who you are. Can you just put sex with me so amazing as your summary? Maybe.
It's a little vulnerable for me. I usually put nothing. But yeah, I will consider it.
Okay, great. Doing great. I'm all that la-la. I'm making it. Cool. So my picks were Frank Ocean's Blonde. Frank Ocean took fucking motherfucking forever to put out a second album, and it was fantastic. There's a lot of people that think Orange, is it Orange or, yeah, Orange.
Channel Orange. That's
Channel Orange, thank you, was better. And I hear that, but like Blonde was just, I listened to it start to finish, like, gleefully. I loved every track. I put a bunch of tracks on my yoga playlists, on my work, like doing work playlists. Like I super loved it. Lemonade, obvi. It was a fucking masterpiece. Freedom is one of the most chill producing songs that ever existed. Oh my God, I'm blanking on the first track that was released that she played in the Super Bowl. Formation.
Yes.
Formation was also fucking incredible, obviously. Yes. So Lemonade, hands down. And then I chose Coloring Book, Chance the Rapper. I listened to that album start to finish probably more than any album I've ever listened to in my adult life. Like, maybe I listen to, like, Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill more than this, but I listen to that front to, you know, start to finish, like, every single day, multiple times a day. As soon as it was released, I fucking loved every single song on it. Love, 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 love Coloring Book. I hope he wins every single fucking Grammy he's nominated for. Love you, Chance the Rapper. You are a beautiful little puppy dog, and I want to kiss your face. God bless.
I'm gone. Praise him. Praise until I'm gone.
Oh, so good.
I'm gone. Praise him. Praise him till I'm gone. When the places go up,
the blessings come down. When the praises go up, the blessings come down.
My honorable mention, super quick, Life of Pablo, Kanye, I love you, baby. Not everybody loves you. Life of Pablo.
I don't has like you. Great stuff
in it. I know Melody doesn't like you, but I fucking love Life of Pablo.
I like you during Katrina, though.
Right. Amen. And then I would also just like to get into like my roots that, and I appreciate that you had ruminations. I was not always like a hip hop head, so I wanted to give a shout out to like indie lo-fi folks that are like my roots, which is Next Thing by Frankie Cosmos. So shout out to Frankie Cosmos, solo. Well, I think they have a band, but with them, but like it's mostly this like one person who sings like lovely, beautiful things that speak to my heart. So Frankie Cosmos, Next Thing, also honorable mention.
Speaking of Kanye, I'm going to go back to Kanye, though. How is he doing?
I honestly don't know. I haven't read some updates. Apparently, there's going to be stuff about his medical progress on the Kardashians. So I'm pretty sure they have been paying off a lot of people to not give updates so that the media doesn't have information before the show airs the episode.
Oh, okay.
Which is interesting political economy, if you will.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure how he is. I worry about him. I apologize for him probably more than is legitimate, but for better or worse, I love him.
I'm not judging you. Just saying I don't like him.
Yep. Right.
Okay. How about songs? That flows in well from albums.
Totally.
How about we sing the song? Okay. But to announce
you
the
sing
songs,
it?
Yeah, we gotta
sing
them.
Yeah, sing it. Great, love it.
Okay, so one of mine is "You Need Me."
Bye.
Okay. And then my other one is "Might Be Over Soon." Thanks for the backup there.
Yeah, I just tried to give you some harmony.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good.
And tell us who those are both by.
The first one was Rihanna, "Needed Me," and the second one was Bon Iver, "22 Over Soon."
So good.
Thank you.
So good. And you also made a note in our Google Doc. I'm breaking the fourth wall again. Melody hates when I do this. We're looking at a Google Doc. Surprise. Melody also agrees with some of mine, including. Baby, how you feeling?
God is here.
So obvi Lizzo. So I didn't put Lizzo as my album because I didn't listen to the album start to finish like on repeat. But Good as Hell, I have listened to like over and fucking over and fucking over again. I also want to give a shout out to Matt. Is it Harz or Harris? Our friend Matt from
Harris.
Portland. Harris. On Instagram, on the gram, Matt is Harz, Matt Harz. But shout out to Matt because Matt's adorable little daughter listens to this song on repeat, and I feel like Matt mentions the song a lot, and I'm just like delighted by it. So anyway, shout out Matt. But Good as Hell is the best. Also shout out to Louis de Pascal. Louis, if you're listening, Louis is a fellow yoga teacher of mine who I teach with at the studio I teach at, and we led boot camp this past month. And in our boot camp, we like made our boot campers like respond to that call, like "Baby, how you feeling good as hell." It's such a delightful song. If you've never like listened to it, please download Lizzo's "Good as Hell." Watch the video. The video is like
super awesome.
Black woman magic, beautifulness, realness needs to be watched. That's the first. Second, We on an ultralight beam. We on an ultralight beam. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is everything. Everything. And then Chance the Rapper comes in, and yep. It's fucking magic. So this is Kanye West's Life of Pablo album, the very first track on the album. We hear this like clip of this young child and his mom talking about the Lord and the devil, and it's very like sort of gospel influenced. And then we hear Kanye sing, and then we hear fucking Chance rap, like beautiful poetry, and then we hear gospel choir in the background, and it's like literally chill inducing. Oh. It is one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard in my life. I fucking love it. Ultralight beam on high.
Okay, I'll do it.
Third, Freedom, Beyonce and Kendrick. I mean, how can you fucking go wrong?
You're supposed to sing it. You're not supposed to say it.
Oh, right. Thank you. Freedom. I can't impersonate Beyonce.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
I can't even nobody like should pretend really to try, Beyonce. Yeah. Nobody should really try. Go listen to Freedom by Beyonce and Kendrick because it's fucking magical and incredible and like chill inducing. Every single song I mentioned is like chill inducing. It's fucking beautiful and I just fucking love it. Honorable mention to Best American Girl by Mitski. I think that was a 2016 release. It's a really good indie lady track. The end.
The end. Okay, let's go to some more nerdy stuff. And we're going to go to reading materials. Again, this is great. LOL because we're media people and we're like, I don't know. What do we read? We
and
read so much
and
yet
we're
so
like,
little.
What do we read? I know. Yeah, my thing about this is that I really, can I just like give a preface to this category, books and articles? And I combined them because for folks who are listening, like, if you're an academic, you know that so much of your reading is like fucking academic reading that you like assign to your students and like whatever. And it's hard to read for pleasure. And also, I also think it's like legitimate and important to include like important internet articles that existed in the world in this category because popular press articles are like very important to influencing the world. So yeah, but it was very interesting to me to realize that I didn't read much new in terms of academic work, for better or worse. I just didn't. So anyway, start with yours. I'll continue to chime in.
Well, the later part of the Lunar Chronicles came out in 2016, so it's a series. I think I've talked about it on the show before, but it repurposes Disney characters, like female princesses.
Yeah, you have talked about it, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been reading that for a while, but they're definitely on the top because I like how they do like a counter-hegemonic version of these like Disney princesses that I grew up with, so.
Totally.
God, so brainwashed. Disney, they're powerful. And then I was thinking about articles, and like I read so many pop culture articles, and I read so many newspaper articles. So I was just trying to think of like one of the articles that I always come back to, or that I share with people a lot, or I mention. And the one that I keep coming back to is The Invisible Catastrophe, which was in the New York Times Magazine. And it was just an article that it was about how a methane leak in a California town, like how disastrous it was, but nobody knew it was happening because you couldn't smell it it really, you know, ruined the immediate environment. But it said something in the article about like the extent of the methane leak was like enough to have 2 million cars running for a straight year, you know? The reason why that article was so impactful to me this year is because I keep remembering it, especially when I, you know, practice my lifestyle politics, you know, and so in our household, if we're going to ride our bike, we say we're going to no dapple because, you know, so if Robert rides his bike to work, I'm like, are you going to no dapple? And he'll say yes or no, you know, but then I think about this article that I read, it's like, you know, these giant companies are destroying our environment. They're the ones that need to get checked, you know? And so just, and it was just a really interesting article, well-researched, angering, you know, so,
totally.
Yeah. And, so that's it for me, but we had like, we double nominated the Shane Bauer.
Right. Yeah. Piece. So I'll start with that one. I was trying to think of sort of popular press stuff. And the Shane Bauer art. So Shane Bauer is a journalist who was incarcerated in Iran, right? Mm-hmm. Iran, when he was reporting over there. And he was released.
He was just on vacation. He was just hiking.
He was on vacation. That's right. You're right.
He was just hiking. Thank you.
Right. So he was incarcerated just as like a tourist, basically.
For a long time.
Yeah, right. And then he was released, and then he came back to the U.S. to continue his career as a journalist, and then chose to go undercover in a high-max security prison to write about being a guard in the prison system. And his essay for Mother Jones that he produced, which is, like, long as fuck, but that coupled with all of the sort of like interviews he did and like media sort of things that he created in as a result of that work, I think really provided, if people read it, and this is the problem, is I think that people who mostly engaged with that, his product, were people who are already critical of the prison system. So there's always the limitations of like your audience, but as a person who is very critical of the prison system, I thought his undercover work was like really fucking poignant, particularly the ways in which he talked about as like, I think he identifies as like a liberal, like a very, you know, sort of like believes in like the need for prison reform, whatever. So he's not like a prison abolitionist or like super, super radical, but he's like woke-ish in ways. And even with that, he found himself like being really fucking like aggressive, being racist, and like admitted to that in his writing. And I thought that was really powerful in that it showed that when things like Black Lives Matter and things like other groups that fight against the prison system and the police system, like the way that like quote unquote good individuals can still be sort of usurped as part of a really violent system. And even though Shane Bauer was this like woke-ish liberal, he still perpetuated this really heinous stuff, including shit that he experienced as a prisoner. Like he was a prisoner in Iran and experienced like abuse. And he felt himself perpetuating that because he was sort of trained in this system. And I thought it was really powerful to see that juxtaposition. And so I was really invested in and excited about that article sort of circulating in the media world. So that's Shane Bauer. I felt really honestly very guilty about the lack of contemporary academic work that I read. I have on my like saved on my bookmarks for my web like my browser. Our friend Carissa Butler-Wall just posted a new article released in 2016 in Disability in a Critical Disability Studies journal that I plan to read. But I don't think I read anything like literally dated 2016 academically. I assigned my students a ton of shit that we've been reading for a while, but not from 2016. So I don't have anything academic to contribute to this conversation. And then in terms of all the pleasure reading I did, none of it was 2016 except for Jessica Valenti's memoir, Sex Objects, which I actually wouldn't put in my best of list because I didn't think it was that well written.
Can we go to podcast?
Sure. Yeah.
That's very media, and then we're going to get out of media. So let's just end with podcasts for our media section.
Perfect. All right. You want me to start?
Yeah.
Okay. So one that is legitimately brand new in 2016 is a podcast called Terrible Thanks for Asking. It's hosted by a woman, a writer in Minneapolis, actually, who I was just telling, just told Mel this whole story, so I'll just repeat it for y'all. She fell in love with a man who had terminal cancer. She had a miscarriage with that man. She had a son with that man when he was in remission, and then that man died. And then shortly after, she fell in love with another man, much to her surprise. And or did I tell you about this, Mel? We talked about this for a second. Anyway. Then she fell in love with another man, married that man, had a second baby. In the midst of that, her father died. So she just basically had tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. And even though on paper, she sort of like has her head above the water because she's remarried, has a second kid, like sort of seems to be doing great. She's actually like says on air that she's like still pretty sad in general about her life. And so her podcast is like about talking to people who, when you say, hey, how's it going? And, you know, people usually say fine. It's all the people who, like, if they were actually to answer truthfully, would say, I'm doing fucking horribly. Here's why. And as a person who has kind of come to terms with the fact that has like sort of a low level sadness about her life, no matter what, I really like feel validated and grateful for voices that are like, life's really fucking hard sometimes, even if it looks on paper like it's doing okay. And so I really, I just discovered this podcast literally in the past week, and I love it. So shout out to that. It was literally created in 2016. All the other podcasts that I listened to were not created in 2016, but I want to give a shout out to some of the other podcasts that I'm listening to. I want to give a shout out to Smash Everything, a podcast by my friend Molly. I've mentioned Molly on the podcast before. They talk about they talk about a ton of issues from like a very unapologetic sort of feminist lens, and they are like very vulnerable and unapologetic in talking about Trump and sexual assault and gender and all of these things. So I just want to give a shout out to Molly and Smash Everything for their current season of Smash Everything, for the work that they're doing in that podcast. And I'll stop there. I want to give a shout out to those two, because most everything else I've talked about before. Obviously I love Rise and Resist. Obviously I love the Struggle Bus, but, I'll stop there. Tell me what you're thinking about.
So some of my top podcasts are So Many White Guys.
Yep.
Which is good. Phoebe of, Two Dope Queens.
Yep.
Didn't Two Dope Queens come out in 2016 as well?
I think that might've actually. Yeah, so it's not an them old, as well.
Yeah. And then, what is a podcast? Oh, There Goes the Neighborhood, which was on WNYC. It was just a 6-piece episode or 6-piece series about gentrification in New York City. So I love that.
Cool. Yeah.
So those are mine.
Okay, great. Great. I just love podcasts so much.
I wish I could just sit and
I just really do
all the time.
Cool. Okay, so that thus endeth our media section.
Yep, and now we're just going to go to more general political stuff. We only have 2 categories in this section.
Great. Great. So how about best of 2016 activists?
Woo!
Woo!
The people united will never be defeated.
You know, some people, you know, that's like a contested chant, because some people say divided, some people say defeated. The people united will never be divided rhymes a little bit better, but the people
united will never be defeated.
I say defeated too. That's 2003 for you.
Okay. So our activists, or some of the top activists in my world, is Neighborhoods Organizing for Change, which I've blabbed about before, but they're a local organization in North Minneapolis, and they just put their money where their mouth is, and they live their values, and it's like a people of color ran organization, and they hire felons to work for them where they can't get jobs otherwise. And I don't know. They just do really important work for working class people of color. And then my other activists of note is Surge, Standing Up for Racial Justice. They've been doing a lot of good work here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, especially keeping white people connected to culturally appropriate ways to help activists out. And they're actually like a direct wing of Black Lives Matter. So here in Minneapolis, at least, they communicate with Black Lives Matter constantly.
So
those are my 2 faves of the year.
Cool. Those are good. Those are super good ones. I just wanted to give a shout out, obviously, to the Standing Rock activists, including Melody's partner, Robert, and including all of the indigenous folk that fucking stood so strong. And we're so grateful that there was a win and a success with No Dapple. But also just want to take this opportunity to say that, you know, that fight is not over. And like, they're still going to like face battles, particularly when the new president takes office. So just keep No Dapple and the Standing Rock Native tribes in your mind. And they had a win, but they're still a struggle. But I just want to give a super shout out to everybody who was at in Standing Rock. Black Lives Matter, of course, like particularly including you, Melody, who, you know, took a hold after Philando Castile. That was in Minneapolis.
Yep.
Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, you know, Black Lives Matter has been going strong for years now. And it's so interesting when I teach shit about, and I just taught Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, Between the World and Me, and he talks about a very early police shooting that gained traction, but because of social media wasn't as present in the 90s, didn't have nearly as much traction. And I'm just so grateful that Black Lives Matter is not fucking acquiescing and just like every time something happens, they're like fucking present. And I'm just, you know, goddess bless whatever you believe in, those folks. And, you know, I try to be tangentially a part of it as an ally, but I'm just really impressed. And then, the third thing that I wanted to mention was, as a Bostonite, the Harvard dining hall workers were on a 22-day strike. Unite
wow.
here. Yeah, 22 fucking days of...
That's hard.
...direct action. People got arrested doing, like, sitting in the streets. It was so incredible to see people literally living in poverty, because they were making... So just to give you some context, like... In Boston, in the Boston area, you are lucky if you can get a studio for like $1,000. So like one room for $1,000. That's the rent situation here. So to have like older, middle-aged to older fathers and mothers, or just individual humans, just people, making less than $35,000 a year in Boston, serving fucking Harvard students... the richest university in the entire fucking nation is fucking disgusting. So they went on a 22-day strike. Shout out to my former partner, Mike Kramer, for helping lead that cause. He did an amazing work helping organize them, and they fucking won. They won $35,000 fucking a year, which is still honestly too fucking low. It's like not enough, but like, it is holding Harvard accountable to pay them at least enough to like live in a fucking home. So amen and power to those fucking workers for fucking winning. Like, people power, that was so beautiful. And then honorable mention to Black and Peak. That's the organization that I work for, or that I volunteer for here the most, sort of. It's the LGBTQ prison abolition group that connects with LGBTQ prisoners. And does letter writing and does court support and jail visits and... is just a really, really great organization. So shout out Black and Pink.
Whoop, whoop. All right. Whoop. Final category. Moment of hope.
You start.
So this category, I just wanted to end on a posy note in terms of like having a pretty rough year in general, but any moments of hope that we... noted in the last year.
Yeah.
So my two were, one was the Bernie Sanders campaign, because I think that gave us a lot of hope for a really long time this year. And then the second one was when Philando Castile's killer, the police officer, he got charged with murder.
Yeah.
So he's going to go to trial for that. So
yeah,
good. Hopeful.
Yeah. So quick killjoy moment. I told Mel that I really want to do a prison abolition episode, because as much as I think it's important to hold killer cops accountable, I also still don't believe in the prison system.
No,
so
I
would push back against that. So that's that. Side note, I would say a temporary moment of hope is the pipeline getting stopped, which is great.
Totally.
And I would also, I just want to sort of give a shout out to, like, there are moments that I have friends on Instagram and Facebook who I've never met in person, who are either women or gender nonconforming people, and occasionally like men too, that are just like really woke and really feminist, and I've never even met them, but we like have built this community, whether it's over Melody, our podcast, like mm-hmm. our Feminist Killjoys podcast group on Facebook is like really fucking powerful and touching sometimes to know that people like feel connected to us the way that I think we feel connected to podcasts that we listen to. And that feels really special and powerful. And then there are also just like other like random people, whether it's podcast related or not, that I've just like somehow been connected with some other like queer femme woman or something. And I follow their Instagram and I like see a selfie of their like cat eye eyeliner and like them saying something about being a queer femme. And I'm just like, thank you for fucking existing and making me feel like less alone in the fucking world. And like, I just want to like give a shout out to like, I don't know if I'm talking about like internet friends or just like community, like fucking like weirdos who like find a way to connect. And maybe this can like also be a sort of tie-in to like a sort of like rest in peace shout out to like the folks who tragically passed at Ghost Ship, but just like really feeling grateful for like weirdos and queer people and like very like righteously angry feminist people who like want to like build community and just feeling really grateful for like outcasts finding space together to like build new possibilities. Does that make sense?
Definitely.
Yeah. So I'm just grateful for all those folks.
That was a good answer.
Thanks. Yeah. So that's that. That was our best of 2016. Any other final sort of 2016 things you want to mention?
No, I think everybody's ready for it to be over. So
I think we're fucking ready for it to be over.
Just can't wait for 2017 to start so that can also be over. But
Amen. Amen. I know. So are you going to D.C. or not? Are you going to be able to go to D.C.?
No, probably not. No.
Okay,
no.
Okay.
I never really wanted to all that much, but...
Okay, that's fair.
And plus that women's march is getting, it seems to be getting kind of dicey with just the
it actually,
split. Or is it better now?
Well, it's actually got better. You should come back on Facebook. I'm
getting all the peer pressure that you lay down on me constantly about getting back on Facebook.
I send Melody screenshots of our Facebook group, and I'm like, just so you know, this is happening. And shout out to our friend on the Facebook group who told Melody how to get the app that can help with the group. So you don't have to be back on Facebook. You can just join our group. But anyway, we posted in the group about how the Women's March had been sort of amended.
Okay.
There are like more women of color involved and et cetera. So anyway, well, so you won't be there, but that's okay. So yeah, we might have like a week here or there that's off, but we'll be back in January. If we're not around anytime sooner,
we'll do an episode next weekend.
We'll do an episode. Okay, great.
I don't know. We'll talk about it. I totally can.
I just want to let you all know that if we miss a week, it's because of the holidays, but we'll be back.
Yeah, so deal with it.
Yeah.
Listen to an old episode and make fun of how poor our sound quality was.
It seems weird to do RWL since we just talked about all of that. So we won't do that. But any last words?
No, I've...
Good riddance, 2016.
Yeah, get out of here.
GT... What's the acronym? GTFO. Get the fuck out.
Oh, I was like, that's not how you say get out of here. I was like, you're messing up the acronym. GTFO, yeah. All right. WTF.
Power.
Woo! Bye.
Bye.
Worship me. worship me.
Oh, here go.
Okay. Stop and smell my roses, posies. Appreciate my poses, they know I'm a fanfare like the Star Spangled. Oh, say, can you see my angles? Cause I'm hotter than the stove top. You can put the kettle on, but I'ma make the thing pop. No, I ain't talking about my work, just my work. You can add it all up while I'm beefing up my purse.
Hands to the sky. Show me that you're mine.
Make me believe it.
Hands to the sky. Show me that you're mine.
Oh yeah, baby, worship me. Worship me. Get it together. Make it feel good. Patiently, quietly, faithfully, worship me.
That's why we recruited you, Melody, to be a cheerleader. And I got up out of my chair and I was like, just because I'm a woman doesn't mean that I'm the cheerleader. You're the cheerleader. You're shorter than me. And it was awesome.
That's funny. That's amazing.
I knew he didn't mean to be sexist, but
right.
It was like right. He just walked right into it. So I had to take that. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Fun.